Thank you very much, and to echo Taifa's welcome, we're really excited for the program today and happy to have you all here. Before we get to the rest of that, though, it is in the GBPI bylaws somewhere that somebody has to come up here and put all that good news about big revenue gains into some context and make sure that your expectations are sufficiently lowered for the rest of the year and that it's not really as good as the papers say. Obviously, for 10 years, that was the job of our founder, Alan Essig. But today, that is my job. That said, through November, 2016 revenues are actually up. They're up about 9% over 2015. However, before everybody gets excited about their wish list for the session, it's important to remember that nearly half of that revenue growth is as a result of the transportation bill that was passed last year. If you take out the $300 million or so from the new gas tax, from the hotel fee and some other fees that were added, we're running right a little bit above 5%, which is still, you know, better than the enacted budget, but just a shade above the 4.5% that was built into the 2016 budget. Of course, 5% is good, especially compared to some much smaller growth years previously. Agencies aren't being forced to submit major cuts in their budget proposals for this year. And we've heard at least some rumors of agencies expecting some programmatic additions and actual increases to their budget to do more than just replace what was lost. But at the same time, 5% is slower growth than during previous recoveries and previous times when we were in the good years. Last year also ended on a good note, and this is important. Final revenue growth in 2015 came in above 6%. Which means that in 2016, we don't really need 4.5% growth to meet the budget targets. We're looking at needing somewhere in the 2-3% range, which is good. It gives the governor some potential flexibility to add some funding in 2016. Obviously, there's always the K-12 midterm adjustment for student enrollment growth for public schools. And there's some budget requests out there. There's about $100 million that is needed in the Department of Community Health. So there should be the funding in 2016 to add that. But the higher than forecasted 2015 revenue is also good for the rainy day fund. Even after taking out the $200 million or so for the midterm adjustment in 2016, it appears that the rainy day fund will have somewhere in the range of $1.3 billion in it, which is getting closer and closer to the peak number pre-recession, where it had more than $1.5 billion. If the governor continues to conservatively estimate revenues in order to continue to drive small surpluses to invest in the rainy day fund, we can get closer after a couple more years to the $2 billion reserve figure that has been set up as a goal. And that would get the reserves to close to 10% of yearly state revenue, which is kind of the main target to be able to weather some downturns. It remains important, however, that lawmakers refrain from the budget-busting tax shifts that would undermine this effort that has been put in to grow the reserves and would undermine the revenue structure. Like I said, Georgia had more than $1.5 billion in the reserve in the bank before the recession hit, and agencies still face significant budget cuts that they're still trying to work their way out of. So while having a big reserve is good, it by no means protects the agencies from major cuts during the downturn. And so that's a big reason why it remains important to be judicious about adding money to the reserve account, continuing to conservatively estimate revenue and not enact big tax cuts that undermine our revenue structure. For the moment at least, it seems that momentum for these sweeping tax cuts has waned amid this desire from the governor and other leaders to grow the reserves back towards that $2 billion figure. But GBPI will of course be watching the Ways and Means Committees and the Finance Committees and others to make sure that we're ready to sound alert when we need people to remind them that they need to protect the revenues and remind them of the important programs at stake. As we look towards the 2017 budget, one of the things that it's important to remember, even amid positive revenue growth is that a lot of those dollars are already taken up. Caseload growth in K-12 education, in Medicaid, in other caseload-driven agencies takes up a sizable chunk of the revenue every year. Adding to that are increases in health insurance costs and retirement costs for state employees. And you add all this stuff up and there's not that much left in terms of discretionary revenue, if you will. Closing the existing public school austerity cut, which is around $460 million, closing that would take up close to half of revenue growth, depending on what the final revenue projection comes in. So last year, the budget added some rather modest merit pay increases for state employees and added back some funding to partially close the austerity cut that has been in place for well over a decade and directed or strongly suggested that school districts use that money to increase salaries for teachers. But there was not a specific pay raise for teachers. Adding pay raises in the 2017 budget for state employees and teachers would run about $120 million a point or so. So if we were to put in a 2 or 3% raise, that would, again, quickly eat into the new revenues. So while things are good, revenue growth is better than not having growth, and the 5 and 6% growth is certainly better than a few years ago. It still barely puts us back to where we were before the recession. And if we look at it from a per capita inflation adjusted standpoint, we're still behind where we were before the recession hit. So a few specific areas that I think will get a lot of attention this session. Certainly education will be a major, if not the dominant focus, especially if we think about it broadly. Between the revised school funding formula proposed by the Governor's Education Reform Commission, the not so quietly kept desire by some to bring horse racing and casino gaming to Georgia in order to fund higher ed, as well as ed reform recommendations around the pre-K program, education stands to get a great deal of attention. That said, with all due respect to the significance of bringing casinos to Georgia, perhaps the most significant issue that the General Assembly will deal with is the new K-12 funding formula proposed by the Education Reform Commission. They propose to replace the existing QBE formula with a student-based formula to distribute the roughly $8.5 billion in state funds to the 180 school districts. The revised formula, which coincidentally is set up to deliver about the same amount of money as the old formula did, must be approved by the General Assembly, and if that happens this year, would seem to take effect in 2018, so still one more budget year before then. While there is a wide range of policy in the Reform Commission's proposal, the funding reforms are particularly problematic. As I alluded to, even though the new formula would deliver districts more than they're getting this year, that is because this year still included a $460 million austerity cut. A better comparison would be to what the new formula would deliver compared to the current formula if it was fully funded. And in that case, it does not deliver as much money. And most districts in particular would see less funding than they do under QBE. In addition to this issue, which at the very least could be addressed with just a legislative appropriation, the new formula fails to include an inflation factor to help districts keep pace with the growing costs of educating students and eliminates money now built into QBE to increase teacher salaries in accordance with their education and their training. While the commission proposes that the legislature periodically review the salary allowance that is built in basically to the new formula, recent experience with how often the legislature does or does not revisit the structure of a funding formula suggests that might be trickier than it seems. And again, that lack of an inflation adjustment could put significant financial pressure on districts as time goes. Furthermore, the revised formula makes permanent the state's ongoing underfunding of school transportation costs. Districts are short about $180 million right now because the state covers 18% of district transportation costs, 18%. Building in these cuts will likely force districts to invest more of their local dollars to get students to and from school, as opposed to putting those dollars into the classroom where certainly local taxpayers, local parents, local policymakers would prefer. Now, it is highly likely that some of the $460 million austerity cut will be closed in the 2017 budget. The revenue growth that we just discussed kind of sets that up. And many experts, including our own Claire Suggs, have suggested that an additional funding boost might be presented for 2018 as an incentive to get lawmakers to adopt the new formula. However, even eliminating the austerity cut doesn't take care of the long-term issues created by the lack of the inflation adjustment. And the development of the new formula in the first place did not include an assessment or a real analysis of what it takes to educate kids to the rigorous demands of the 21st century economy. Even in reality, closing the austerity cut may dramatically underfund our schools, especially the schools that serve large numbers of economically disadvantaged kids or kids with other needs that requires more state investment. Beyond the revised funding formula, the commission delivered about four dozen recommendations across a handful of different categories. And there's significant expectation that the recommendations for pre-K will move in the 2016 session. Those recommendations focus on adding money for the lottery-funded program, adding lottery reserve dollars to increase startup funds for new pre-K programs, to increase pre-K teacher salaries, and to bring class sizes back to 20 from 22. To be clear, these recommendations represent an important first step, but they do not deal with all of the hurdles faced by Georgia's pre-K providers or the families who rely on state-funded program to give their four-year-olds the early education they need. Now, this brings us to the casinos and their potential to build on the lottery and provide a substantial new revenue source for higher education. It goes without saying that this is a significant decision for the legislature and the governor, and I'm sure there are many different views in this room as to whether increased gambling is good for the state or not. But I'm going to focus on where the money goes. Much of the conversation so far has been related to hope and using this as a new revenue source for the Hope Scholarship. And as great as the Hope Scholarship is, Georgia would be better served using these dollars to fund needs-based scholarships to help kids who otherwise will not be able to go to college, and really to keep kids in college who otherwise might have to drop out because they can't afford it. In the last school year, 6,500 kids were dropped from the university system because they could not afford it. Georgia cannot afford for this to happen every year if we're to meet the goals of Governor Deal's Complete College Georgia and to meet the workforce demands for Georgia moving forward. And so investing new revenue from gaming, whatever that looks like, into needs-based scholarships would be a critical step. Of course, this debate may likely last the whole session. And many expect 2016 to just be the first of a multi-year conversation on the topic. I'm guessing that many also expected the legislature to take longer than just 1 year to pass the transportation bill. And in many ways, getting the question on the 2016 ballot may make more sense than having voters decide gaming's fate while at the same time electing a new governor, a new lieutenant governor, a new attorney general, whatever races are open. So file this away as kind of a wait and see. I would say conventional wisdom says this takes longer than 1 year to get through, but at the same time, don't be terribly surprised if it happens in 1 year. Now, back to transportation for just a minute. We all know the transportation package enacted last year wasn't perfect. No legislation ever is. But at the same time, it was an important win for the idea that state investment to solve a problem is a good thing. And so from that standpoint, it is a critical bill. As I noted earlier, a fair amount of the revenue growth that we're experiencing now is from the transportation package and reforms, if you will, to some of the fees that were particularly unpopular, such as the hotel fee or others, will have general fund implications beyond transportation funding. Right now, the hotel fee goes to the general fund, and so eliminating it or reducing it may just cut non-transportation funding that relies on general fund dollars as opposed to cutting transportation. And these programs that we all know are still recovering from budget cuts related to the recession. So it really wouldn't feel right up here to stand at a GBPI conference and not talk about one of my favorite topics, which is healthcare, the coverage gap, Medicaid expansion, however you want to say it. And in one of these years, I will be talking about the fact that we got something done, that we moved it forward, and that hundreds of thousands of people will get coverage. But in the short term, we'll talk about the state's continued refusal to accept the $3 billion and what that means. First of all, I think everyone who's interested in this issue should take the recently publicized efforts from the state chamber, from Grady Health System, as a good sign that lots of people understand the seriousness of the issue, and that Georgia really, that in the long term, not doing something is not an option. That said, even if the legislature does not move forward to close the coverage gap in 2016, some work needs to be done to start paving the way so that as the state chamber's efforts to craft a Georgia plan move forward, or as the Grady effort to craft a local waiver move forward, there's a place for those to continue to develop, and there's a place for policymakers to get engaged. In particular, getting the legislature to go back on the law enacted in 2014 that tries to tie the governor's hands on these sorts of issues would be a great first step. But in absence of that, getting the legislature involved by having a hearing by the health committees or by the appropriations committees, or setting up a legislative study committee so that this conversation has a place when the legislature finishes their session this spring, would be very positive. Across the country, more than 30 states are seeing the benefits of expansion. We just got word the other day that Louisiana, the new governor there, intends to move forward on his first or second day in office, and a handful of other states are expected to continue this conversation this year to try to move forward while it's still 100% federally funded, even though the 90% long-term is still pretty good. Ensuring Georgia can realize these same benefits of more people getting covered, significantly reducing uncompensated care costs for hospitals, and even driving budgetary savings in many of these states, if not all of them. GBPI will continue to work alongside the chamber-led effort and with Grady and other partners to drive this conversation forward. In addition to the budgetary and financial issues we've laid out, there are a host of other issues we can expect to take up a lot of air under the Gold Dome this year. Ongoing conversations on how to provide the newly legal medical cannabis to those who are eligible are already a hot topic, and a bill was introduced to allow it to be grown here, and it has been a reason why one of the governor's floor leaders has stepped down from that position to push that, so that will continue to be a big conversation. Also, the RFRA conversation from last year's session looks to be around for another year. I won't prognosticate on the likely resolution of these debates, but we'll say that once again, the fact that legislators who want to stay legislators will have to qualify for re-election during the session adds another wrinkle in determining what moves and doesn't as we go forward. Speaking of that, we've heard some pretty optimistic timelines that might have them wrapping up in early March this year. And while I wouldn't go scheduling your beach trip quite yet, it's clear that the session will be fast, it will be short, so that legislators can get back to their districts and campaign, and that means it's going to be busy. On top of that, a March 1st Super Tuesday SEC presidential primary adds yet another wrinkle, as national attention, national candidates will be here right as the legislature is nearing the last couple weeks of the session. The budget comes out next week, and of course we will follow with our series of reports and analyses outlining what's in the governor's budget, what's not in the governor's budget, and what should be done. Then throughout the session, we'll continue to update the progress of the budget while we also watch closely for problematic tax bills that threaten to erode Georgia's revenue base, while keeping tabs on the progress of the governor's Education Reform Commission recommendations, as well as what happens with the casinos and where the money goes. Amid all that, we'll continue to move the ball forward on extending health coverage to more Georgians, while advocating to protect the safety net, as well as take better advantage of existing programs that could be used to improve Georgia's workforce by providing training and education opportunities to more people. It will be a busy year, and we're very glad to have you all here today and to have your partnership throughout the year. I don't